I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plonky.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
Sutton's, suppliers of gardening products since 1806, sponsor the Plant-Based Podcast. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
So we're here at Nurtured in Norfolk, which is a very different type of growing site because they're growing edible blooms and microgreens. And we're going to talk to Alex Drain and find out more about this fascinating world.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us here today.
No problem. Thanks for coming.
Well, it's always a pleasure because there's flowers and all kinds of things.
And we can eat them as well.
We can eat them, yeah. So how did it all begin, though? Take us right back to the beginning.
So we originally started the business. It came about because of a demand for something a bit different in a restaurant. So myself and my parents are both chefs. Alan and Sue were chefs for 25 years. And I was lucky enough to be a chef with them for 5 or 6 years as well in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they were looking for a different product, a different presentation to put on.
They were tired of parsley and, Lolo Rosso.
Yeah, and just normal large herbs or just, or shoots that were out at the time. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they started growing just a selection of baby salad leaves or what you'd buy as salad leaves and cut them at a very small stage and just started serving them as a side salad in a restaurant, and the feedback was phenomenal. Mm-hmm. From the very start, the feedback was just
so they had a restaurant at the time?
Yeah, they were working for a restaurant in Norwich at the time.
Okay, yes. So it must have really surprised the diners with this sudden new style of garbage.
Because how many years ago was that?
So that was 8-9 years ago now.
So just before kind of the whole edible flower and microgreen, craze, if you like, had come a bit more mainstream.
It was very much at the start of it. And what they started was, it's very different and niche, and no one had ventured into using the products they do now on food. So that's what made it very different.
So they grew all of their own, didn't they, in their greenhouse?
Yeah, so Alan started off with just a small vegetable trough in the back garden. That's all it was. He made it. It took him about 20 minutes to make it. Chucked some soil in it and chucked the seeds on top and then started cutting from
that. Hey, presto.
And that was as simple as that at the start. And the quality of the product was lovely. Yeah. And then as the demand grew and wholesalers that were eating in the restaurant at the time, because it had a very good reputation, started asking for the supply of this product so they could sell it to other restaurants. And it just spiraled from there, and just snowballed.
That's incredibly entrepreneurial, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? But now, obviously, you've gone from this small scale, just chucking a few seeds in a trough to a greenhouse to something much, much bigger.
Yeah, so it went from the back garden, so putting up one greenhouse and then another greenhouse and another greenhouse and then a 70-foot polytunnel. Mm-hmm. And it just grew from there. So we then had to outsource more space. So luckily, there's a nursery just up the road from us. We inquired about renting some glass there and slowly rented a bit more glass at a time, and that's how the business grew, and it just developed very naturally over time.
Wow, and that's the site where we are now, right?
Yes, that's here in Tofford. So now we've got about 4 acres of glass here now, and probably another 2 acres of outside growing area, polytunnels and out in the field as well, we grow flowers.
Cool. And is kind of cropping edible flowers, is it like quite space heavy, labour intensive? How does it work? Like, what is a square metre going to give you of, say, nasturtium flowers over a year? I can't even quantify that.
Yeah, it's all weather dependent with all horticulture, really, and temperature, plays a huge part, and the amount they pick from the plants themselves and the condition they're in. A lot of the time the plants are in quite poor condition because they're constantly picking the foliage or the flowers off them. So the plant is always stressed and always trying to flower, so yields are much higher for the year as well.
Interesting.
Because when we recommend with bedding plants to pinch them out in order to get more flowers.
Yeah, exactly the same as that. So they all react to that stress, that factor. And there's other things you can do watering them a lot less to stress them out, to flower heavily.
This is actually breaking my heart. No. I'm talking about stressing out plants.
Quite cruel to plants here, really.
It's because the plant wants to run to seed, doesn't it?
Yes, that's
it's
all
constantly
it.
Trying, that flower. Isn't it? Yeah.
So we try and stop that as much as possible.
And do you only grow these flowers in season, or have you got lights that mean you grow nasturtiums all year round, for example? Or?
Yeah, so we heat all of our greenhouses now, and some of them have got lights as well. So we can actually extend the growing season. Mm-hmm. Not for all the varieties we do here, but we can extend it with some by a month, maybe two, up to 2 months.
Right.
But the yields start to slow down in the winter time, but we still try and grow them because there's always a demand for the edible flowers in the restaurant.
All year round?
All year round. Doesn't matter the time of year. 365 days a year now.
So you have edible flowers here, you do microgreens, don't you? You do mini miniature veg?
Yeah, micro veg, baby veg, herbs, yeah.
Out of all of these acres that you've got and everything that you grow, what is like the best crop to yield? What yields the highest crop?
I would say the microcress is the highest yielding crop. So you get more per square meter, like you were saying, or square feet out the microcress, because just the density of seed that you're planting into one tray or one cell at any time. Yeah.
And quite a quick turnaround as well.
And a very quick turnaround. Yeah, the microcress anywhere in the summertime can be from seed to crop cutting is 7 days.
That's incredible. We are talking cress here, as in when you're a kid growing cress in an eggshell, aren't we? That kind of cress, right?
It's very similar, but there's 72 varieties of it now. So it's very extensive. The range we have of the flavours, the textures, colours is huge now, yeah.
Right.
So is that basically vegetable seedlings then?
Yeah,
you're
vegetable
eating?
Seedlings, salad
in that
leaf seedlings.
Smaller size?
Yeah, and just growing them and cropping them at a very small size, anywhere between 5 and 7 centimetres. Yeah.
And the goodness in there, the nutrients, is more concentrated as well, so it's ultimately a lot better for us.
Yeah,
as well,
massively concentrated. It's been proven, scientifically proven now, that the micro herbs have far better nutritional content cut at that size than they do compared to the larger size leaves or the large plants, or even as a vegetable.
Okay. And that's a real interest to listeners. I mean, I grow microgreens at home, and it's so easy, isn't it? Because I know, I'm not trying to take over your business here or anything, but you know, you can grow on a windowsill in your greenhouse all year, can't you? Just have a tray of compost. Doesn't even matter what compost, because it doesn't need loads of nutrients. You just need to get it to.
Yeah, the seed has all the nutrient it needs for the first 2-3 weeks of its life, anyway.
Yeah.
So
and just a few centimetres later, you chop it off, and there you've got your.
Yeah, and that's it. And some of the varieties will regrow, and you can crop them once or twice.
Really?
Yeah, like red vein sorrel, for instance. We can crop that twice, so we can grow it to 5 centimetres, cut it, and then we can grow it again, and the red vein actually becomes a lot stronger in colour and a lot darker and deeper, which is what we're actually looking for, or what the chefs are looking for.
With all of these plants you've got here, acres and acres of different types of plants, how do you control things like pests and diseases, that kind of thing? Because you must have to battle that sometimes.
Yeah, it's a very intensive growing environment, so we get a lot of pest pressure through the year. What we've found is the problem is that using pesticides and fungicides, we can't really use them because of harvest intervals. And because we've got a product that's going into the catering industry every single day of the week, so that wasn't viable to do that. So I then got in contact with Coppet Biological, who supply us now with all a huge range of biological beneficial insects, sprays, the lot, and it's very, very effective. So we use a completely natural system basically all the time, so relying on predatory insects to predate on the pests.
And you're just a wholesaler, aren't you? You're not open to the public, you don't sell to the public?
We do actually sell to the public. If we tend to get local chefs come in and want to have a look around and pick their own products.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're more than welcome for that to happen. Yeah, for people to come in and see the produce we have and to see the variety and the range of different products. Okay. Yeah.
So where would most of your edible flowers and microgreens, where would they end up? Like, for example, are any in the supermarkets or farm shops?
Currently not in supermarkets.
Is it something you're looking into?
It's something that could happen in the future. It's not, we're not writing it off yet, but currently we have... The demand for the product just for wholesale is so high currently that
you guys always look super busy.
We just haven't been able to look at that prospect yet. But most of our product here, like I said, goes to wholesale and then goes to restaurants all over the UK, as far as Scotland, and all, a lot of it goes into London every day. So all into high-end restaurants like Core and Heston Blumenthal's restaurants and Gordon Ramsay's restaurants.
So you could be eating edible flowers and microgreens from Norfolk
when you're
in any restaurant in the world.
And I'm sure you said to us once before with the sorrel that it even goes into first-class carriages on British Airways, doesn't it?
Yeah,
to garnish on their meals.
Yeah, there's some of the micros. We supply to a wholesale company that supplied British Airways and all the first class
flights. So that could be your furthest reaching delivery, couldn't
it? 40,000 feet violas as well,
And they were all colour coordinated, weren't they?
Yeah, so there's pick, there's a viola, colour of viola they pick, a blue, a really deep blue that they specifically want for British Airways to go on the first class flight.
I want my own colour coded.
But I wonder how many people realise you can eat them.
That is a thing.
Yeah, they're probably neatly putting them to the side and not realising that you can chomp away on those flowers.
Probably. Yeah, so definitely. We'll find out more about that in a little while.
It's such fun to be here at Nurtured in Norfolk, this edible flower farm in Norwich, and find out more about the whole story of edible blooms, unusual leaves, microgreens, and Alex is such a great ambassador for the company. But let's not forget that it was his parents that started it off.
Absolutely.
You know, seeing this need for edible blooms that wasn't being supplied for in the UK, and then taking that all the way through to a big company with almost 100 staff, incredibly entrepreneurial, and, you know, something we don't always see in horticulture.
No, absolutely. And starting it just from a trough in the garden, you're just sprinkling seeds. And now they've got this huge big business. It's quite inspirational, I think, for anybody in horticulture.
Definitely.
To see that, you know, these careers can happen. You can create so much from just learning about something in your own garden.
Of course, and it also shows that you can grow a lot in a trough as well in your garden. So, you know, you don't need much space in order to start experimenting with these flavours, that's Mertensia, the oyster leaf, with the lovely oystery flavour, or perhaps even wasabi that you tried yesterday.
Yes.
Or, indeed, edible flowers. So there's a lot of edible blooms that are already in our gardens, from daylily through to fuchsia.
Absolutely. And, I mean, I've grown quite a few edible flowers at home.
Have you?
I have. I've grown, like, nasturtiums in hanging baskets. Of course, you've got pansies. Lovely, aren't they?
Vitamins A and C, so there's goodness
lots
in them as well.
Lots of nutrients in edible flowers as well. So, you know, there's so much more to flowers, is how I see. You know, they don't just look pretty. They don't just do amazing things in your garden for wildlife and nature, but we can also eat them and get nutrition from them.
Of course. And it's not just things you grow yourself. It's also, you know, this goes partly into foraging.
Yeah,
you know, what you can then find in the local hedgerows. Yeah. And, you know, I'm always, whenever I go for walks with friends, I'm, you know, pointing out stuff in front gardens as well as hedgerows. Kind of, you can eat that, you can eat that, you can eat that.
Do you pick them, though?
Sometimes. I mean, I've been off and made nettle soup at home before.
Nettle tea as well.
Yeah, nettle tea. I've been at friends and seen their lovely begonias and then ripped all the heads off and chewed on them because they've got a lovely lemony flavour as well.
Dandelion tea, of course, as well. So.
Dandelion flowers are edible. The leaves too, isn't it?
And the root. Yeah, when you can make dandelion root tea.
Well, yeah, when I was a kid, I was doing all sorts of weird experiments with the plants in my parents' garden, and I remember grinding down the roots of dandelion to make, I think it's kind of like a coffee, almost like a chicory substitute coffee.
Okay.
And, yeah, it was...
It was awful, actually. there was too much dirt in it. I don't feel I cleaned the roots properly. But, you know, I was always experimenting and wanting to try these different flavours.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been looking around at Nurture Norfolk today,
yeah,
and so finding out more about.
Looking forward to hearing more from Alex about, you know, what we can do at home to grow our own. So, focusing on the edible flower side of things,
yeah.
Obviously they look pretty, some of them taste okay-ish, well they have, all have different flavours, don't they? But is there any nutritional value to edible flowers?
Yeah, there's, again, very similar to the microgreens, the flowers, there's such a huge variety that are edible, and they all have different medicinal uses, really. So a lot of them are old medicinal plants, yeah. That... were currently used for medicine, that got pushed out, but some of them still are used in medicinal drugs today. So those varieties are huge benefits. For instance, like you mentioned, the toothache plant.
Electric daisy.
Electric daisy, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Spilanthus oleracea?
Yes.
Yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm. Memorised that. Uh-huh. That's called the toothache plant because it was used to cure gum disease and toothache, and it's got a lot of good properties.
Because it numbs your mouth.
Yeah,
it
numbs,
right?
Your mouth, yeah. And okay. A lot of them have got high contents of vitamins and minerals and all different types.
I think pansies and violets have got quite high levels of vitamins A and C, and in terms of flavour, they've actually got a little bit of a flavour and a bit of a crunch as well, haven't they? So they're more meaningful than perhaps, you know, a limp primrose, for example.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
It feels like you're getting a bit of crunch in your salad rather than just decoration.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We try and pick varieties that, one, look quite aesthetically nice on a plate in a restaurant, and that have got flavour to them. So like the begonias, the apple blossom. Really sharp and acidic and sweet at the same time, but again, it's got a really nice crunch and texture to it.
Is that like some of the best flavours then, would you say? Begonias, what else has got a good, strong, notable flavour?
Yeah, so talking of strength, I would say probably the garlic flowers. We grow probably five different types of chive or garlic.
Okay.
That
I wonder what that smell was.
Yeah, they are super powered. I'll get you guys to try some when
you
go out.
Okay.
But that's great because it's perhaps they're not as strong as onion then. And a lot of people find red onion quite strong and they're always removed from their salads. Perhaps if you want that onion flavour, it's a much more tame version of an onion, isn't it?
Well, it's just it's a much smaller amount, but it does pack a punch, yeah.
So,
do you have a favourite?
I would say nasturtium flowers are probably by far my favourite, just because they're one of the first flowers that we grew, the edible flowers that we grew, and I just love the pepperiness of them. They're just really, really nice, and I like quite spicy food as well, and they just work really well. Work really great in salads as well.
So do you use edible flowers in your own cooking at home, or do you just have
I do try as much as I can to use them at home, and especially the microgreens as well. And I'm, even now I've got my garden at home, it's all going to be edible flowers next year.
Oh, that's
so
fantastic.
I just only pick varieties for edibles, not for ornamentals, really.
So you must be super healthy then. You're getting all that nutrition.
Yeah, even if he's having beans on toast, he's got a flower garnish on, perhaps.
Yeah. And a bottle of wine every night.
But garnished with flowers.
Yeah, perfect. Edible flowers are so in vogue right now. Are there any famous chefs that have been here to the nursery and selected flowers for themselves and their own creations? Who have you had here?
Yeah, definitely. Most recently, Claire Smythe came with Johnny Bone from the Paul restaurant in London. And we took them around and showed them the different types of edible flowers we've got. And we're actually growing specific edible flowers for a dish at their restaurant, which is amazing. Gives us a lot of enthusiasm to grow.
Okay, what are you growing specially for them then?
So we're growing a wild rocket flower for them.
Okay, oh, that's really beautiful with the kind of complete cross, isn't
yeah,
it? And
really,
the veining. Too.
Really delicate little flower. And it's, yeah, it's used on a potato dish, like one of their most famous dishes in the restaurant as well.
What, potato salad?
No.
I love potato salad.
Yeah, it's as simple as a Maris Piper potato, but it's just the cooking techniques they use and then the decoration afterwards and the flavour.
Okay, wow. Yeah. So it's really that finishing touch, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely.
But with the peppery flavour of the rocket, you're also getting a bit of flavour that can obviously pair with the potato.
Yes,
too.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay. And how about Heston? Has he been here or?
Heston himself
has sent some
been
of his guys.
But yeah, some
yeah.
of
he
some
sent
of
his
chef.
Guys and he hasn't been here.
I know, not yet.
Come on, Heston.
Yeah.
Come on.
Okay. And what does he use in his restaurants?
So they use a huge range of our flowers, cresses,
uh-huh.
and leaves. But yeah, they use, I suppose, blue borage is quite a popular one for them.
Oh,
sort of blue
okay.
borage flowers. Really delicate, again, really delicate, and
mm-hmm.
just adds a bit of finesse to the plate. It's got that cucumber flavour to it
yeah,
as well.
Of course it has, hasn't it? It's popular for gin.
Yes.
Well,
you like that, Ellen?
I do like that quite a lot, actually. I do grow some edible flowers at home as well. And, you know, it is quite trendy at the moment, as we were just saying. Do you have any recommendations for the best edible flowers to grow at home?
Yeah, I would say nasturtiums are probably... One, because they're one of my favourite edible flowers for flavour. Their pepperiness is lovely. They're great in salads. But because you'll actually get free products from one plant, so you can eat the flowers, the leaves and the seed pods, so you can pick all the seed pods. And they're really nice. So just a burst of flavour in there. Really peppery as well. There's also marigolds that are really common garden plants.
I love marigolds.
Yeah, you can eat the flowers off.
That's great. English ones as well as French ones?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Lovely peppery
oh,
kind
cool.
of flavour, yeah, with the salad. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, really
it?
Nice. And they've almost got, I suppose, orange peel flavour as well, like zest,
okay.
almost zesty. Yeah.
Lovely.
I think it's so cool because there's not just lots of edible flowers that people can grow very easily from seed in their gardens, but even if they walk out into their garden right now, there's probably a lot of edible flowers
mm.
already growing
yeah,
there.
Yeah, they don't
yeah.
even
yeah.
realise.
Yeah.
Such as daylilies, because you can stuff those lovely long trumpet flowers in the same way as courgette flowers,
yeah.
can't you?
Yeah,
I never
definitely.
Knew that.
Yeah, and they're crunchy, they've got a bit of flavour to them as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
The body.
Really nice,
yeah.
yeah. And plants like lavender.
Uh-huh.
Really,
okay.
we grow a lot of lavender here that are really potent in flavour, but we have
yeah.
people use them in cocktails, like you said,
yeah.
in gin
yeah.
as well. So again,
lavender cookies.
Yeah.
I
very
used to
nice.
Cook
lavender
biscuits when
did
I was
you?
A kid, actually.
Yeah.
Lavender
one of the
ice
first
cream.
Things I baked.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
Dahlias?
Dahlias, of course, the petals and also
yeah.
the root
yeah.
too. Or even kind of like in the hedgerow, like hawthorn berries can be used, but also the leaves.
Yeah.
We've got this nutty... kind of flavour to them as well, haven't they?
And fuchsias.
Yeah, fuchsias.
Which is has been a huge
Hello.
Surprise to
Hello.
Me this year.
Yeah, and the berries.
Hello, someone else has just
Hi.
Walked in. Hello.
the berries have got good levels of vitamin C as well, haven't
yeah.
they?
Yeah,
yeah.
Really
and so
nice.
You can make a whole load of things.
Jams
yeah,
with fuchsia
jams, course,
berries,
yeah.
yeah, very nice.
Wow. So it is, yeah, there's already a lot of flowers in our gardens that we can use.
Yeah, definitely.
On our plates as well, or even in smoothies.
Yeah,
for
definitely.
Example. So that's really, really great. Interesting as well. Talking more about trends then, I want to kind of discuss Instagram, because with Instagram, there's lots of lovely, lovely photos, but, you know, it's all a little bit fake sometimes. And there's a lot of people decorating cakes and different kind of pictures with lots of flowers. And you would think if you were decorating a cake with flowers, you would assume that they could be edible. But there's been instances of plants that are actually
mm.
inedible, in some
yeah.
in some cases poisonous, that have been used to decorate cakes or cupcakes. Like, what do you make of that? Do you think it's become too trendy and people are going a little bit crazy? Or how would you advise people on that?
No, I think it's just, I think people need to make sure they're educated in
mm.
the different types of edibles there are. And there's,
mm-hmm.
there's lots of reading out there which we go through to make sure that the plants we're using are edible.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
working out the nutritional content as well is very
mm-hmm.
important.
So where do we find you on social media?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook, Instagram, and we have just launched our new website. It came out, or the new website was launched last week. It's got the list and availability of all of the products that we supply here, the flavour, the sort of colours and the availability, yeah.
Oh, that's really great. And
So you sell to the public. So members of the public, listeners to this podcast, could well go on the website and order some edible blooms for themselves?
Yeah, just go on to nurturedinnorfolk.co.uk and then and then select the products you want and they'll be delivered within 24 hours.
And is there any minimum order?
No, there's not at all, no.
I'm going away with some today. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for having us here today.
No problem.
It's been really very interesting, isn't it? Mm. I'm inspired to go and grow more edible flowers.
Good. Thank you for coming.
No, thank you.
So it's flower and garden show season.
It is.
It's kicking off, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost... No, it's not really all year round, is it? No. When is the first one? Which is the first of the season?
Cardiff, I think.
Cardiff.
RHS Cardiff.
April.
It's April, and then...
But I used to really enjoy some of the winter shows, RHS ones in London, actually. So they did used to be sort of all year round.
I think there were some urban ones. And then there's some autumn ones, like Melbourne
Autumn
show. And then there's the spring shows, isn't there? Mm.
But do you know what? By Jove, there are so many now, aren't there?
By Jove, there are.
There really are, though. Like, not just the RHS, but then there's so many independent ones. It's really
and
hard
county
to...
And shows as well.
Hard to keep track, isn't it?
But we don't have to go to all of them, you know?
No.
The more the
better.
The more the better, because then the more people can go and visit, you know, horticultural displays.
Which one's your favourite? Is that a really wide question?
Yeah, it's really hard, and I've often been asked this, I'm sure you have as well. I can pick my favourite, but it's only my personal favourite.
Mm-hmm.
Every show you go to has its own individuality. It's slightly different. It's there for, you know, it entices a different audience, perhaps.
Yeah.
Has a different atmosphere because of where it is. So they're all fab in their own way.
Mm.
But I think, for me, Hampton Court, so RHS Hampton hits the spot.
When I was there last year, it was so hot, though. I did a talk in the theatre and I nearly collapsed. It was so warm.
Too much.
I did Tatton Park last year, and I quite like that one, actually.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Do you not like Chelsea then, or...?
I love Chelsea because of all the reasons I shouldn't love it.
Makes any
sense.
For celebrities?
Well, you can do some celebrity spotting, which is obviously not what horticulture's all about. I find that a bit awkward, actually, because there's lots of celebrities there who don't really have any interest in gardening whatsoever.
But then it's great that they're... Kind
promoting
of,
it.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of a double-edged sword, really, because we're getting the exposure for our industry, but at the same time,
completely.
We don't want them to use it. But then, that's what marketing is.
Well, like you said, double-edged sword, maybe. Mm. I love Chelsea. I also dislike Chelsea. But I tell you what, nothing beats the flower marquee at Chelsea.
Oh, it's always the flower marquee for me.
Wow.
It must be because you probably can't see over people's... shoulder gardens.
Do you know
too short to enjoy the gardens outside, aren't you?
That's really cruel. On press day, it's fine because there's not so many people. But if you go amongst the crowds, it can be quite difficult.
But the flower marquee,
flower marquee at Chelsea is second to none.
Yeah.
It's not beaten in any other show. Mm. It's absolutely outstanding. So for that, yes. It's
And sometimes, though, like, you can go year on year and it almost looks the same, but there's... I've noticed in the last few years a few of the stands have kind of evolved in different ways, and this is what I used to love about the London show as well, the urban show they had in the autumn.
Yeah.
Because they did display things in very fresh new ways as well.
Was that the one where they had lots of hanging?
Yeah, the hanging snowdrops.
That's it.
And stuff.
Yeah,
because, you know, I love new ideas in horticulture, so what's this dog doing?
There's a dog rolling around on the rug behind us making lots of noise.
Thinks it's on a bed of manure, probably.
Rolling in fox.
Oh, now the other one's licking it. Right, this is great.
So for those reasons, you can't beat Chelsea. Mm. But for me, Hampton Court's kind of a bit of everything, so it's much more relaxed.
Yeah.
I love how they have all the school gardens and the grow-your-own area. They changed the layout last year, which I thought worked quite well. So generally, for a nice, relaxed, non-pretentious feeling, I prefer Hampton.
But you can buy stuff there, but then I find that means that I'm tripping over trolleys all the time.
Yeah.
And there's only so many metal spirals that one person can buy for their garden.
You don't like
metal
spirals?
I don't know, it just seems so samey. I don't know.
For the first time ever, I went to Chatsworth last year.
Okay, I've never been. No.
I'm going again this year. What was really superb about Chatsworth was that they had a huge kind of meadow of cosmos, mm-hmm. which was in front of Chatsworth
That's
Hall.
Cool.
Chatsworth Hall? Or Palace yeah. Hall. And Palace. It looked fab. It was just really very beautiful.
That's cool. Wow.
I love all of the shows, really.
Are you speaking at Chatsworth this year?
Chatsworth.
Hashtag ad.
Yeah, hashtag ad.
You can tell us, you know. I don't know if you're like too shy.
No. Yes, I'm really shy, me. I am. I'm speaking at Chatsworth every day. It's open in June.
Speaking at a flower show every day, Ellen.
Twice a day.
Aren't you brave?
Aren't I crazy? I'll be exhausted by the end of it, probably.
It's very weird to do the same presentation more than once.
Yeah. And also, once you've done it quite a few times, you forget what you've already said because you've said it so many times before. But so I'm looking forward to doing that. What's your favourite? Are we boring you? Sorry, you're yawning.
Totally. Well, I used to really love the Urban Show in London. I really liked... do you remember when they had Grow London in Hampstead? That was a really nice one. I think almost the RHS Urban Show kind of had inspiration from that Grow London. Okay. With lots of kind of contemporary stuff, people doing stuff in very different ways. But I do love... I think Tatton Park is really great for me. And hashtag ad, I will be speaking there this year as well.
Are you?
I'm actually hosting a stage.
Fab.
Dun, dun, dun.
Excuse me.
How cool's that?
That's amazing. But can we just say that actually my favourite show of all time is obviously the Norfolk show.
Oh, Norfolk. You really are getting into the hashtag ad now.
Hashtag ad.
What is that, the Norfolk show? Because I heard it was rubbish last year.
No, you never, because you came and it was ace. So I'm running the horticultural area at the Norfolk show. But what reminded me about that is that you are coming to the Norfolk show and you're going to do a talk and you're going to do a bit of hosting. Did you know that? And you're going to be
hosting. Hosting? What am I hosting?
Some of the stage. I've only just told Michael that. And you're judging as well.
Yeah?
I love
doing the judging. Yeah.
So it's really nice to kind of... it's a lovely, relaxed feeling, but we've got... two huge marquees, one for the Norfolk and Norwich Horticultural Society, so all their amateur competitions and flower displays are fantastic. Then we've got a stage, we've got a cafe area that's being run by Cafe Britannia, which is a really great enterprise. And then we've got a huge floral marquee with loads of trade exhibits. Show gardens, school gardens, outdoor trade, all horticultural. It's really exciting. And of course, I have to say I love that because I'm totally involved in it. So that's my favourite, actually.
I think people guessed.
Sorry, did I just run on about that? But hey, you're all welcome. Come along.
But there's also a few others out there, such as, Blenheim? There's one at Blenheim.
Blenheim, Highlands.
Yeah, Woburn.
Woburn, yeah. I'm speaking at Blenheim and Highlands.
That's cool. But a lot more than they used to be.
So it does seem to be a lot. But that's good. It's spreading the word.
Yeah, it's really good. I hope they get enough, obviously, business and traffic. There's also the Toby Buckland ones down
Toby Fest. Is it Toby Fest? I've never been to that one, actually.
No, that's pretty cool.
What's your favourite one to speak at? Because obviously you've spoken at quite a few. What one have you really enjoyed?
Different, really. Tatton Park was cool because we were... like within the poisonous garden, so it was a very intimate setting, and people would walk past and kind of end up, you know, stopping to listen.
Yeah.
But speaking of flower shows, where you've got that kind of, it's always difficult because sometimes you've got a crowd there, sometimes you've got no one, because there's always so much going on at the show, and it's very transient audience. Like people might walk off in the middle because they want to go and see something else, and you're kind of like, oh my god. I've offended them or something.
This is really awful because there's people leaving.
It's really strange to do. And sometimes you have to almost present to nobody, which is weird. Have you ever presented to nobody?
I've never presented to nobody, but maybe this year it might happen. I don't know. But you're right, because when you go to a flower show, you don't generally want to sit anywhere for half an hour or 45 minutes because there's so much to see and
do.
I think also it's quite weather dependent.
So if it's
really good weather outside, people do want to be outside. If it's not so warm or a bit rainy, then people tend to sit a little bit longer and listen. So,
but it is... it's weird because you can be talking to nobody and then the actual organiser ends up sitting in the audience and that's then the person you're talking to. I've had that a couple of times actually.
Sometimes the organisers do come and sit to watch just to see how it's going.
Just to check up on you.
A little added pressure. And out of all of the gardens that you've seen, the show gardens, has there ever been one that really stands out?
I can never remember things like this. What I remember in my head the moment you say that is the Silk Road garden that was built at Chelsea, I think, last year, with the big kind of mountain-shaped pieces of steel in different shades of red and pink.
Oh,
and they kind of came
that's
down.
That's ringing a bell.
It was full
of
Chinese plants. That was pretty good.
It's ringing a bell, but I can't really properly remember.
I also, last year, there was a few. Some of the ones with lupins. There was some really cool.
There was a lot of lupins, wasn't there?
Citrus-coloured lupins with some stone. That was nice. Oh, God, I really... I can never remember what they are. I have to then Google these afterwards, and I'm kind of like, you know, yellow lupins, stone garden, and hope that I get the result.
The one that stood out for me last year was actually at Chatsworth, and it was called Haytime in the Dales by the off-grid gardener. Oh,
okay.
It was just phenomenal. It looked
off-grid
It was fabulous. But going back to what you're saying about the lupins, you at the shows, there's generally always one or two plants that's included in almost all of the gardens.
Yeah.
How does everybody know that next year it's going to be lupins and a year after it's going to be whatever it will be?
How does that happen? Perception, though, you know?
No way.
Yeah.
No
but also,
way.
I wish they'd choose something that was easier to grow lupins. Come on. They should incorporate maybe some Baptisia, which is a bit easier to grow than a lupin, lasts longer. Or even tree lupins. Tree lupins have a lovely structure.
Okay.
They'd be nice in
Do you think there'll be lots of tree peonies this year, since you've been out there promoting tree peonies?
I don't know, not necessarily for gardens at Chelsea.
Yeah,
They've got a small enough window of flowering as it is, let alone getting them ready for a show.
Mm.
God, could you imagine putting a garden together?
No, I don't. I've not been involved in a show garden ever, but I've watched the guys build them, design them and build them at the Norfolk show, and wow, I don't know that I could do it. Oh my gosh.
I think there's a lot of stuff.
I don't know
I'm
could do it.
Too scared to even attempt because I know that I would want to do it really well. So I almost know that
perfect.
It would be impossible to do it really well. So, well, not impossible, but just, yeah, it just feels like too much. Oh my
I think one day we should do a show garden, actually.
Yeah?
You and I will put a plant-based podcast show garden somewhere.
Or a show garden with plants that actually would perform and grow in a normal garden.
Yeah,
that would be
like a realistic
as well.
Garden with a plant-based podcast.
Yeah. But also a garden that looks like a normal backyard as well.
Yeah.
Like we often talk about, like with Garden as Well, how the gardens that they use are very much like big kind of, you know, with box hedges, you know, divisions. But actually, it'd be lovely if they started using three bed semis, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, quite agree.
And that's really how people really garden at home.
We could do something like that. Hey, there's a plan.
So many ideas. Get your notepad, babe. Get your notepad, you're pulled.
The Plant-Based Podcast is sponsored by Sutton's, suppliers of gardeners' favourite products since 1806. Unsurprisingly, Sutton's now have everything you need for your outside space. Award-winning flower and vegetable plants, garden furniture and equipment, plus gifts for gardeners. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.